In Matthew chapter 25 and verse 14, it says, "For it is just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability, and he went on his journey. Immediately the one who had received the 5 talents went and traded them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents gained 2 more. But the one who had received 1 talent went away and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received 5 talents came up and brought 5 more, saying, 'Master, you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful with few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." Also, the one who had received the 2 talents came up and said, "Master, you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." And the one who had also received the 1 talent came up and said, "Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you have scattered no seed. And I was afraid, and I went away, and I hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours." But his master answered and said to him, "You wicked, lazy slave, you knew that I reaped where I did not sow and gathered where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore take away the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he who will have abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have will be taken away. Throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness, in that place where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth." Good morning. It's certainly good to see so many here on this morning. Evidently, it was not announced that I was preaching, so you showed up anyway. I appreciate that. This is the 5th Sunday of this month, and when we have a 5th Sunday in a month like this, then the elders have seen fit to allow individuals in the congregation to have an opportunity to speak. So I'm not the regular preacher here. If you're visiting with us, we're very glad for your presence. We're excited that you're here. We're honored by your desire to worship God with us. We invite you back at any time that you have an opportunity. If you're one of the new FC students, then we're very glad for your presence and want you to be encouraged that our elders have seen fit to do something like this and to give an opportunity. And if you have aspirations of preaching, this is a great place to try to get some practice and experience in that. So we encourage you as well. We're honored by everyone's presence here because it shows a desire to come and to worship God together. Several months ago, I was looking at this parable, and I was looking at it in my daily Bible reading, and as I read across it, I thought, and how does that apply to me? Obviously, this parable that Jesus is accounting to the folks that are listening there, it's based around money. But I think the obvious application is that these are responsibilities that were given to these slaves. This was their responsibility. He gave to each one of them according to what he felt that they could accomplish. And so I looked at this as the application for me. These talents are really equivalent to responsibilities. What responsibilities do I have as a Christian? And with those responsibilities, I think it's also apparent from this parable that there was expectation. So with responsibility, there comes expectation. Last week, I was listening as Marty was preaching, and he said something that I thought for a minute, wow, that's really true. What he said was, Christianity is not for everyone. And unfortunately, that is true, and it's because of a decision that an individual would make on their own to not take on the responsibilities of Christians. to not live up to the responsibilities that God and Christ has given to us as a Christian. And so they choose not to be a Christian. And so Christianity is not for everyone. And that's unfortunate. There are some in this world who would seek the praise of men rather than seeking those things that please God. And Jesus describes those people as having their reward. If you seek the praise of men, then that is all the reward that you would get. And it's sad, really, to think that we would be so short-minded as to trade the glories of heaven for the praise of men. And yet that's true. But one might say, but Christians have a lot of responsibilities. There's a lot of things really to consider if you're going to be a Christian. I mean, Paul tells us in Romans, we've got to abide by the law of the land and be a good citizen. James tells us that we've got to watch our tongue and be careful what we say. Paul describes it as avoiding coarse jesting and vain language. We're supposed to be modest in our approach to life and in our apparel. He told Timothy, teach them there to be modest in the way they dress. Jesus tells us that we're supposed to honor our father and mother. So there's responsibilities as a Christian for a child. There's responsibilities as a Christian for adults. There's responsibilities for parents to raise their children, for children to honor their parents. There's responsibilities for men and for women. There's responsibilities for older men to teach younger men. There's responsibilities for older women to be teachers of younger women. There's responsibilities for the married. There's responsibilities for the unmarried. There's responsibilities for the widows, for anyone widowed. There's responsibilities for elders, for deacons, for preachers, for teachers. And if you're a man, you are a son, so you have a responsibility there. You may be a father, maybe a grandfather. You might be an elder. You might be a preacher. You might be a teacher. And all of those things at the same time. If you're a woman, you're the daughter of someone. You may be a mother. You may be a grandmother. You've got responsibilities to them. You've got responsibilities as a wife. Maybe you work outside of the home. You're also a teacher. And again, all of those things at the same time. Christianity has so many responsibilities, it might seem overwhelming, the task of living up to all of those Christian responsibilities seems almost daunting. We're very blessed in this congregation to have so many little babies. As is so often apparent, it's such a wonderful, glorious sound. We have little babies, we have toddlers, and I look at them, and I know that those who have been parents, you've experienced this, you've got this little child. When they're born, they know nothing, and they have no responsibilities, and they have no cares, and as a parent, you begin to teach them, and you begin to mold them, and I know that there's this competition, this unspoken, almost denied competition between moms and dads about what word the child is going to say first. Is it going to be mama or is it going to be dada? But they're so proud when the child has said its first word. And then you encourage them and you correct them and you push them along so that they add more words to their vocabulary, and then to the words they make sentences and ideas, because it's your job as a parent to bring them up and to add responsibilities to them so that they can survive in society. They need to be able to learn to communicate. And the same is true about walking and eating they eat, they cry, and they eat whenever they want to. But then eventually you teach them they eat at mealtime. And so you've added that responsibility as they learn through these processes. And parents, they humble themselves, and they're so patient and so loving, and they encourage. And this child grows into a very useful part of society because of the instructions that the parents have given. And so it is with us as Christians and God our Father, with all of these responsibilities that we expect, that we're expected to live up to. You're baptized into Christ, and you're a newborn, just like a baby, and you begin to learn, and you begin to study, and God patiently, lovingly moves us along and teaches us more, and with more learning comes more responsibilities, and with age comes more responsibilities, and with those, just as we read in this passage, Matthew, more responsibilities, more expectation. And to ones who are at different levels in their Christian learning, different expectations. And so it says in verse 25 that this master went away and he entrusted his possessions to them at a level of expectation that he felt each one could handle. To the one he gave five, to the one he gave two. And notice even the last one that he gave one, the expectation was that that one individual could handle those responsibilities and live up to a certain level of expectation. And that was not misunderstood even by the one who received one. For he said later, "Master, I knew that you reaped where you did not sow. I knew that you gathered where you had not scattered seed." He knew that there was an expectation. He simply didn't live up to it. And so in verse 18, it says, I want to look most specifically at this idea. "But he who received the one talent went away and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money." And so as I was looking at this verse some time ago, I thought, I would like to think of myself as someone who would be five talents or even two talents. But I know, and I confess to you in my life, that there are times when I have dug a hole and I have buried whatever responsibility it was that I should have been living up to. There are times in my life when I used whatever excuse seemed convenient at the time to not live up to my responsibilities. And I don't think that that's foreign with any of us. I know that at times in our lives, we all do that. We are human. And so as I thought about that, I kind of reckoned the idea of these excuses that I would bury my responsibilities with, that the excuses I could visualize as a shovel. I could use a shovel. And a shovel is a tool, and if you want to know all about shovels, I would refer you to Tommy Cannon. He knows all about shovels. But a shovel really is a tool that you can use to dig a hole and to bury something. And so for a few minutes, I want us to look at some of the things that I found have happened in my life that maybe you can get some application for in your life. Some visual, a mental picture maybe that helps you think, well, that's something that maybe I should avoid. Shovels. There's your regular, just normal groundbreaking shovel. There's no shovel if you lived up north. There's a regular aluminum shovel. There's a spade with a split handle, regular old garden shovel, a whole bunch of different tools that go with shovels. There's a little shovel. That's the little bitty spade. There's a big shovel. And if that's not big enough for the project you want, there's the Komatsu SDA 16V 160, 16. You get the picture. That's a real big shovel. And if that's not big enough, there's a really big shovel. And if your project's just outlandish, there's even a bigger shovel. And I give you that a little bit of a humor, but think about the responsibilities that we have in our life that sometimes we look for just about anything to get out of. I think maybe one of the things that, as I look back on my life, I used too much was a shovel just called occupation. We all have to work. We all have to work, and we all have to make money, and we all have to provide for ourselves. We are told so. It was that way from the beginning. When God put Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, their instructions were tend the garden. There was work to be done. If they weren't going to work, they couldn't eat. That is made known to us in 2 Thessalonians 3. If a man's not willing to work, neither should he eat. And so when you look at an occupation, you've got to balance there the responsibility between providing for your own and other Christian responsibilities that we have. Because certainly if the job that we have is in conflict with the responsibilities that we have as a Christian, then it's quite possible we would use that occupation to lessen our responsibilities. For instance, I've known individuals who have come to a knowledge of the truth and have been baptized who were at the time working for a company delivering beer, driving a truck, and felt like that with their new knowledge and their new dedication to Christ, that was not something that they could perform anymore. And so they quit and looked for other work. And it may be that the type of work that we do, we have to guard against all the time. As you know, sometime in the past, I was working a job. The ethics of the company didn't square with what I felt like, and I walked away from that. But at the same time, it might just be that the occupation we have, though wholesome, keeps us from worshiping God. Maybe it interferes with our worship service. Maybe it makes us so very tired, we're unable really to help anybody, or to set up a Bible study, or to go and teach someone. And those are the kinds of things that I feel like if we are working a job that is keeping us from our responsibilities as Christian, we should take a look at that. Jesus mentions putting tasks ahead of worship in the parable of the feast that this master threw. And really the parable is about the Jewish nation denying Christ and Jesus taking that away from them. But he says, in offering that invitation to one of them said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen and I'm going to try them out. Please consider me excused. And that's an example of where someone put a job ahead of the invitation of Christ. It might be a shovel in our life, one of those things that cover up our responsibility. Might be our family. I know that everybody in this congregation, I can't imagine that this doesn't apply, has somebody who is a family member who is not a Christian. And it may be that you've got folks, as I do in my family, that are just completely irreligious. Or it may be that in your family like mine, you've got folks that consider themselves religious, very, very sincere, absolutely dedicated and devoted, simply not following the New Testament pattern. And quite honestly, sometimes it's discussions with those family members that are the most difficult because they feel like their interpretation of Scripture is correct, even though you point out things that they're in direct violation of, and you begin to worry about your family relationships, and maybe you shun even the idea of talking about spiritual things because it just causes an argument, and then there's unsettlement in the family. And quite honestly, sometimes the strongest persecution comes from family members when you're trying to discuss biblical matters. Nonetheless, we cannot back up from the kinds of responsibilities that Jesus gives us as a Christian to teach the word, convert souls. But he does say, he who loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he who loves son and daughter more than me is not worthy of me. We cannot compromise our faith because of the persecution that we might get even from family members. This list of shovels really is probably nearly endless. And it depends really on your own life and your own circumstances and your own situations as to what might be a shovel in your life. Maybe it's success and overconfidence and self-confidence and a lack of relying on Christ because we've made it in this life and we did that on our own, and that's really a danger that we have to overcome. Or maybe it's failure. Maybe it's an event in our life that just never seemed to work, didn't work out, and now we kind of blame God with that. And that might be a shovel that would cover up our responsibilities. Or maybe fame. Or poverty. There's a desire in a lot of people just to seek pleasure in this life and forego the peace of mind and the peace that comes from being a Christian, seeking the pleasure of this world. Or TV. TV is a huge shovel that just eats away our time. I have heard speakers refer to TV as a time vacuum. You sit in front of the TV and you just get sucked in. And the statistics I looked at, the latest, that the average American, not adult, the average American now watches 4 hours and 35 minutes of TV a day. And I thought, well, how impossible is that? 4 hours and 35 minutes? I mean, no, there's only like a half an hour in the morning when you might catch the news and the traffic. And then, you know, you come home and you have dinner and maybe you have a Bible study with your family. And then it's about 8 o'clock and you sit down and you watch CSI. And, you know, after CSI is without a trace. And then, well, there's Law and Order, you know. And then you got to catch the evening news to find out. And I thought, wow. And that was just what a normal person watches. The same statistics said the TV is actually on in a family's household for about 8 hours a day. Maybe not the same person watching all the time, but 8 hours, it's as much as we work. That's horrible. And the internet is the same thing. You sit down and you start surfing something, and before long, you're three or four websites away from what it was that you were really looking, but, you know, I was interested in that, and so I read about it, and I've engrossed myself in things other than teaching Bible studies or setting up Bible studies or talking to people who are sick or writing letters, things that I could have been much more productive with, but that's where I found my time. And this is one that I think maybe affects the young people, the college age group the most. Is just this seeking for some entertainment, not bad entertainment, just, you know, even wholesome entertainment. But you've spent your whole life up till now under the household of your parents, and now you're out. Maybe you're at college. I knew an individual once who graduated from high school in 1983, high honors, literally straight A's. Went to junior college and in 1 year graduated with an AA degree, and all of this while he was still at home. And then he went away to Orlando to go to school. And, you know, in Orlando, I was not under my parents' house anymore, and so, you know, time was mine, and I could go and do as I wanted to, and I, you know, when you get done studying at 1 a.m., and you realize I'm on my own, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and Waffle House is still open. You know, and you, not that Waffle House is entertaining, though it can be at 2 o'clock in the morning. The idea was I didn't have to answer to anyone. And so, I was out seeking these things on my own because I was not being self-disciplined. And in one semester, I was on academic probation. And you would think that that would be enough. But they kicked me out the second semester because of academics. And then I had an opportunity to go to FC. And a lot of things changed. And so things, you know, God has a way of working things out. But I look back on that experience and realize that was just a bad use of my time. And so I encourage young people that in this newfound freedom that you don't go looking so much for entertainment. And maybe the shovel we used to cover up responsibility is age. I'm just too young to teach that class. Or I'm just too old to teach that class. I just can't keep up with that anymore. You know, there's never really any mention in the Bible about too young or retiring from Christianity. Maybe it's our health. And there may be some legitimate concerns, but nonetheless, we can't use that to shun our responsibilities. Have you ever heard someone say, well, there's just so many others who know so much more than me, they should do that? Well, in my estimation, that's just false humility, and that's really not a good excuse. Or maybe just like the person in our parable, they were just lazy. And I've been guilty of that. When a whole afternoon goes by that I felt like, well, I'm just going to use this time for myself, and realize I was just lazy. I could have been any number of things doing for God. Proverbs is full of warnings about being lazy, overcoming that temptation to sit around to sleep. The encouragement is to work. Or maybe it's just simply sin in our life that we know we're sinful creatures, and we feel like I'm too sinful to do anything good for God. That guilt that kind of overcomes us and shuts us down. And what that really amounts to is that our faith has faltered and wavered, and that we have forgotten that God has got the ability to forgive us, that we can overcome sin through Him, and that we can get back to work immediately. Or maybe it's fear. And I really think that this is one that touches us all. That we're, sometimes we're simply afraid. We're afraid to start that Bible discussion. What if they know more than me? Well, then there's a good opportunity to learn something. Well, what if I'm humiliated? Like Christ? What if I'm persecuted and I'm just afraid? And we're not talking really about like fear of heights or fear of spiders. That's not really the case. We're talking about courage and faith to stand up when it seems like the whole world is watching us, seeing what we're going to do, and to say, I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe He's the Son of God, and I am going to do what is right. Or maybe it's really the courage to do that when no one's looking. When we're all alone. When it's just me and God. Do I do what's right then? Because that takes courage. That takes courage. The opposite of fear is knowledge. If you know that there's nothing in the dark, then you're not afraid of the dark. It's the fear of what's unknown that sets us off. So if we know what we believe and we're sure of on what we stand, then we can easily overcome fear if we have the knowledge. We can overcome the fear of rejection, of humiliation, of persecution. And we could start that conversation with our next door neighbor. I'm ashamed to say that I have neighbors on my street that I don't even know by name. I know some, and I've talked with some about religious matters. But I've not been as diligent in that as I should. Or the courage to start the conversation with a coworker. Oh, but we're not supposed to talk about religious matters at work. Why is that? Or a family member. That family member that you know we differ. And fear kind of sets us back from having that conversation. The courage that it takes for a parent to say no to their child, who they know are headed down the wrong path, but they have courage to guide them in the right way. And that teaches them to have courage to stand up and to do what is right. Revelation chapter 21 verse 8 says, but for the cowardly and the unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Isn't it amazing? Doesn't it cause us to be fearful in the right way? That a coward, one who's not willing to stand up for God, not willing to state his faith in Jesus Christ as the Son of God, a coward is listed among murderers and idolaters, sorcerers. God is looking for us to have courage. He is looking for us to stand up for what is right. He is looking for us to put away things that cause us not to do His will. To look for opportunities to fulfill responsibilities. To look for opportunities to gain more responsibilities. To build our faith, to build our courage, and to build our knowledge so that we can stand when anything is thrown at us with faith in Christ Jesus. knowing that He will help us through, that He'll never put us in a situation where we can't find a way of escape, that no temptation can overcome us, that no persecution can be so great as to take heaven away from us. That's the kind of courage that He expects from us, and that's the kind of cowardly person, that opposite person, that He is sentencing to a second death in Revelation. It's the kind of courage that a person has to have to stand up and say, I want to be baptized. To step out from the world and to say, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And I'm willing to give my entire life to fulfill the responsibilities He's given me. I want to have courage. I want to have faith. I want to be a member of the Lord's body. And I hope this idea of shovels is not too silly, but helps us kind of have a mental idea of the things that happen in our lives. I find myself sometimes studying Scripture and disassociating what I'm reading from the application for me. What does it mean to me? And as I read this passage, I thought, you know, I would like to think I'm the person with more responsibility and higher expectation. But honestly, I have got to guard myself against shunning my responsibilities. And I've got to step up and take on more responsibility and fulfill the expectations that Jesus has of me. If that's the place that you find yourself today, that you're ready with your courage and your faith to say, I want to be baptized into Jesus Christ, that I believe that He is the Son of God, and that He has the power to forgive me of my sins and to wipe my slate clean and give me an opportunity to live up to the responsibilities and the expectations that He has for me. If that's where you're at today, then we invite you to make that known as together we stand and sing.